Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from the story of John G. Patton. He was the missionary to the South Sea Island cannibals in islands that were formerly known as the New Hebrides. Now it's called the nation of Vanuatu. We're on chapter 40. It's called Waiting at Kwamera. Before I left the harbor, I wrote and left with Nowar, letters to be given to the captains of any vessels which called, for the first and the next, telling them of our great danger, that Mr. Matheson was almost without food, and that I would reward them handsomely if they would call at the station and remove any of us who might be spared thence to Antietam. Two or three vessels called, and as I afterwards learned, they got my letters. But while buying my stolen property from the natives for tobacco, powder, and balls, they took no further notice of my appeals and sailed past Mr. Matheson's, straight on to Antietam. Ah, the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Well, let me now call the leading events from my journey that intervened betwixt this date and the breakup of the mission on Tanna, at least for a season. Though, blessed be God, I have lived to see the light rekindled by my dear friends Mr. and Mrs. Watt, and shining more brightly and hopefully than ever. The candle was quenched, but the candlestick was not removed. On the 23rd of January, 1862, Mr. Matheson sent for Tara, Kati, and Kapuku, his three principal chiefs, to induce them to promise protection till a vessel called to take us away. They appeared friendly and promised to do their best. Alas, the promises of the Tannese chiefs had too often proved to be vain. On Friday, 24th January, report reached our station that Miyake and his party, hearing that a friendly chief had concealed two of Manuman's young men, compelled him to produce them and club them to death before their eyes. Also that they surrounded Manuman's party on a mountain and hemmed them in there, dying of starvation and trying to survive on the carcasses of the dead and on bark and roots. Also that Miyake had united all the chiefs, friends and foes alike, in a bond of blood to kill everyone pertaining to the whole mission on Tanna. Jesus reigns. On Sunday, the 26th January, 30 persons came to worship at the mission house. Thereafter, at great risk, we had worship at three of the nearest and most friendly villages. Amidst all our perils and trials, we preached the gospel to about 116 persons. It was verily a sowing time of tears, but despite all that followed, who shall say that it was vain? 20 years have passed, and now when I am writing this, there is a church of God singing the praises of Jesus in that very district of Tanna. On leaving the second village, a young lad affectionately took my hand to lead me to the next village. But a sulky, down-browed savage carrying a ponderous club also insisted upon accompanying us. I led the way, guided by the lad. Mr. Matheson got the man to go before him while he himself followed, constantly watching. Coming to a place where another path branched off from ours, I asked which path we took, and on turning to the left, as instructed by the lad, the savage, getting close behind me, swung his huge club over his shoulder to strike me on the head. Mr. Matheson, springing forward, caught the club from behind with a great cry to me, and I, wheeling instantly, had hold of the club also, and betwixt us we wrested it out of his hands. The poor creature, craven at heart, however bloodthirsty, implored us not to kill him. I raised the club threateningly, caused him to march in front of us until we reached the next village fence. In terror lest these villagers should kill him, he gladly received back his club, as well as the boy his bow and arrows, and they were lost in the bush in a moment. At the village from which this man and boy had come, one savage brought his musket while we were conducting worship, and sat sullen and scowling at us all the time. mocking questions were also shouted at us, such as, who made the rains and the winds and the hurricanes? Who caused all the disease? Who killed Missy Mathiesen's child? They sneered and scoffed at our answers, and in this Tara, the chief, joined the rest. On the 27th, at daylight, a vessel was seen in the offing, as if to tantalize us. The captain had been at the harbor and had received my letter from Nowar. I hoisted a flag to induce him to send or come on shore, but he sailed off for Anitium, bearing the plunder of my poor mission house, purchased for ammunition and tobacco for the natives. He left the news at Anitium that I had been driven from my station some time ago and was believed to have been murdered. On the 29th of January, the young chief Kapuku came and handed to Mr. Mathiesen his own and his father's war gods and household idols. They consisted chiefly of a basket of small and peculiar stones, much worn and shining with use. He said, while many are trying to kill you and drive the worship of Jehovah from this island, I give up my gods. I will send away all heathen idols from my land. On the 31st, we learned that a party of Miyake's men were going about Mr. Mathiesen's district, inciting the people to kill us. Faimungo also came to inform us that Miyake was exerting all his artifice to get us and the worship destroyed. Manuman even sent from inland Raki, his adopted son, to tell me of the fearful sufferings that he and his people were now passing through, and that some were killed almost every day. Raki's wife was a chief's daughter, who, when the war began, returned to her father's care. The savages of Miyake went to her own father's house and compelled him to give her up as an enemy. She was clubbed and feasted on. On Sabbath, 2nd February, 32 people attended the morning service. I addressed them on the deluge, the flood, its causes and lessons. I showed them a doll, explaining that such carved and painted images could not hear our prayers or help us in our need, that the living Jehovah God only could hear and help. They were much interested, and after worship, carefully examined the doll. Mr. Mathiesen and I, committing ourselves to Jesus, went inland and conducted worship at 7 villages, listened to by about 100 people in all. Nearly all appeared friendly. The people of one village had been incited to kill us on our return, but God guided us to return by another way, and so we escaped. During the day on 3rd February, a company of Miyake's men came to the mission house and forced Mrs. Mathiesen to show them through the premises. Providentially, I had bolted myself that morning into a closet room and was engrossed with writing. They went through every room in the house and did not see me, concluding I had gone inland. They discharged a musket into our teacher's house, but afterwards left quietly, greatly disappointed at not finding me. My heart still rose in praise to God for another such deliverance, neither by man nor of man's planning. Chapter 41, The Last Awful Night. Worn out with long watching and many fatigues, I lay down that night early and fell into a deep sleep. About 10 o'clock, the savages again surrounded the mission house. My faithful dog, Klutha, clinging still to me amid the wreck of all else on earth, sprang quietly upon me, pulled at my clothes, and awoke me, showing danger in her eye, glancing at me through the shadows. I silently awoke Mr. and Mrs. Mathiesen, who had also fallen asleep. We committed ourselves in hushed prayer to God and watched them, knowing that they could not see us. Immediately a glare of light fell into the room. Men passed with flaming torches, and first they set fire to the church all around, and then to a reed fence connecting the church and the dwelling house. In a few minutes the house, too, would be in flames, and armed savages waiting to kill us on attempting an escape. taking my harmless revolver in the left hand and a little American tomahawk in the right. I pleaded with Mr. Matheson to let me out and instantly to again lock the door on himself and wife. He very reluctantly did so, holding me back and saying, "Stop here and let us die together. You will never return." I said, "Be quick. Leave that to God. In a few minutes, our house will be in flames, and then nothing can save us." He did let me out and locked the door again quickly from the inside. And while his wife and he prayed and watched for me from within, I ran to the burning reed fence, cut it from top to bottom, tore it up and threw it back into the flames so that the fire could not by it be carried to our dwelling house. I saw on the ground shadows, as if something were falling around me, and I started back. 7 or 8 savages had surrounded me, raised their great clubs in air. I heard a shout, "Kill him! Kill him!" One savage tried to seize hold of me, but leaping from his clutch, I drew the revolver from my pocket and leveled it, as for use, my heart going up in prayer to my God. I said, "Dare to strike me, and my Jehovah God will punish you. He protects us and will punish you for burning his church, for hatred to his worship and people, and for all your bad conduct. We love you all, and for doing you good only, you want to kill us. But our God is here now to protect us and to punish you." They yelled in rage and urged each other to strike the first blow, but the invisible one restrained them. I stood invulnerable beneath his invisible shield, and succeeded in rolling back the tide of flame from our dwelling house. At this dread moment occurred an incident which my readers may explain as they like, but which I trace directly to the interposition of my God. A rushing and roaring sound came from the south, like the noise of a mighty engine or of muttering thunder. Every head was instinctively turned in that direction, and they knew, from previous hard experience, that it was one of their awful tornadoes of wind and rain. And now, mark, the wind bore the flames away from our dwelling house. Had it come in the opposite direction, no power on earth could have saved us from being all consumed. It made the work of destroying the church only that of a few minutes. But it brought with it a heavy and murky cloud, which poured out a perfect torrent of tropical rain. Now, mark again, the flames of the burning church were thereby cut off from extending to and seizing upon the reeds and the bush. And besides, it had become almost impossible now to set fire to our dwelling house. The stars in their courses were fighting against Sisera. The mighty roaring of the wind, the black cloud pouring down unceasing torrents, the whole surroundings awed those savages into silence. Some began to withdraw from the scene. All lowered their weapons of war, and several, terror-struck, exclaimed, "That is Jehovah's reign. Truly their Jehovah God is fighting for them and helping them. Let us away." Panic seized upon them. They threw away their remaining torches. In a few moments, they had all disappeared in the bush. And I was left alone, praising God for his marvelous works. Oh, taste and see that God is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. Returning to the door of the mission house, I cried, "Open and let me in. I am now all alone." Mr. Matheson let me in and exclaimed, "If ever, in time of need, God sent help and protection to his servants in answer to prayer, he has done so tonight. Blessed be his holy name." In fear and in joy we united our praises. Truly our Jesus has all power, not less in the elements of nature than in the savage hearts of the Tannese. Precious Jesus, often since have I wept over his love and mercy in that deliverance, and prayed that every moment of my remaining life may be consecrated to the service of my precious friend and Savior. Chapter 42 next time will be Sail-O, Sail-O, You got to come back and see what that's about. Thank you for listening. Do write me a note every once in a while. Contact me with questions, comments. I'm at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com. And look around the site. I think you're going to find some helpful things there from great preachers, stories from the persecuted church, Bible studies, a whole lot more. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.